Rewind the dynamite from the post rest inside. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear are opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Rewind to Dynamite with John Pollock and Waiting.
Hey, what's up, John? How you doing?
I was going to ask, how's your Wednesday? But this is not the first time we've talked today, so how's your Wednesday night?
Watched the wrestling show. Yeah. Had some chicken.
Oh, okay.
So
I had some chicken as well.
Yeah, okay. Cool. If you guessed a protein, it would probably be between three choices for most people. So we landed on the same one today. Chicken. All right.
Have you watched Hawkeye yet?
I have. Yeah. I have. Have you?
Nope. Not yet. I might. Okay. I might this weekend.
Okay. Try to catch up. Well, you're going to have like 4 hours to catch up on.
Almost. I'm not going to race through them. I might start it. I have an opening now.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Succession is over on Sunday, so I'm going to have a second opening. I'm done Squid Game. I will be done Succession.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'll find some new shows.
Yeah. It was a good episode today, so I'll be talking about it with WH and JoJo tomorrow.
Look out for that Thursday night for all patrons out there. This is our 45th show this week, so if you want to go catch up on the past 44, you can start with Rewind to Raw. Make your way through Ask Away, check out some daily news updates, and boom, you're all caught up to speed on everything going on in the world.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's always a lot, and we'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock with me and Kate. So, apologies if like the energy is a bit lacking on some of these starts, because we've been talking all week. We've been talking every day. John and I just like run out of things to talk about sometimes with these banter segments, so...
Yeah, now when I call up Wei, he hangs up on me. It's very awkward.
Well, I'll try to eat something other than chicken. Maybe we can surprise each other for Friday.
Well, we have all of those shows that are up now as well. MCU Later will be up Thursday. Friday night, Rewind to SmackDown will also feature Mr. Ting and Kate from Montreal. And then Saturday, we have a doubleheader here at the site. We will have a UFC 269 post-show with Phil Chertok and Eric Marcotte, while patrons will get a bonus post-show with myself and Mike Murray reviewing ROH's final battle.
Mm-hmm. Also, in the morning on the free feed, it's another edition of the Long and Winding Royal Road with WH Park. I believe Dylan Fox is his guest this week. So lots of content for you guys. And, of course, WrestleNomics on Sunday.
Yes, so lots to talk about. I'm sure you guys, you and Kate, will go more into the NXT ratings notes on Thursday, but not a great number. Some very, very bad numbers of late for across the board, like that we can go back to Friday with SmackDown and Rampage. Raw did very poorly, and NXT, I was surprised they did not get any kind of bump, and it was definitely on the lower end of NXT's existence on USA.
I mean, people are doing other stuff. They're watching other things, not professional wrestling, it looks like.
Well, I briefly just wanted to talk a little bit about the passing of a Black Jack Lanza, because that news came out today, passing away at the age of 86. Obviously, everyone will remember, you know, Black Jack Lanza, synonymous as a member of the Black Jacks, with Black Jack Mulligan, who died several years back as well. But Jack Lanza, he broke into the industry training under Vern Gagne. He came out of the University of Minnesota and started out early in his career as a babyface. And ended up getting paired together. It was a singles run early on where he was in Dick the Bruiser and Wilbur Snyder's territory in Indianapolis, even challenged Gene Kaniski for the NWA championship on a pair of occasions in 1969, actually wrestled Gene Kaniski to a 60-minute draw 4 days before Kaniski's lengthy title reign, multiple years, ended just days later to Dory Funk Jr. But it's in 1972 that he is paired with his most famous partner, Blackjack Mulligan, and the tandem is managed by Bobby Heenan. And they would wrestle many territories together, including Indianapolis, but they would go to Montreal, they would go to Dallas, and of course to the WWWF, where they became tag champions in 1975 and beat the team of Dominic DiNucci and Irish Pat Barrett, who just died like a week and a half ago. So just crazy, the timing of that. And then the team essentially broke up in 1975 when in the Crockett territory, there was the 1975 plane crash. And this ended the career of Johnny Valentine. This was a very, very famous story, ending his in-ring career. And he was like the main heel of the territory. So George Scott, the booker, reached out and wanted to bring Blackjack Mulligan in for a singles run. And thus the team broke up. Lanza would go on to work in the AWA. He teamed with Bobby Duncombe and was still with Bobby Heenan as a manager in the AWA territory. And then, you know, continued on throughout his career, worked a bit in a Georgia Championship Wrestling, winning their version of the television title. And then his second career was working in a behind the scenes capacity with the WWF as a road agent for years and years. This was up through and beyond the Attitude Era and into the 2000s. And you saw a lot of remembrances from people that worked with him closely in that capacity. Triple H put out a tweet today about his role as an agent. You know, Jim Ross, Vince McMahon. There were lots of comments about Blackjack Lanza, who was very, very much tied to the fabric of the WWF. They put him into the Hall of Fame in 2006 alongside Mulligan at a year that you and I went to the Hall of Fame ceremony. Way that was the one in Chicago with Bret Hart. So that was the career of Blackjack Lanza, and we'll try and have a bit more up on the site in the next day. But want to start off with a bit about that. 86 years of age. So somebody that, I mean, most of his life dedicated to professional wrestling.
Our condolences, and thank you for that, John.
We're going to move on to Dynamite, a very interesting show, I will say, where a lot of the, I think, interest of tonight's show, Way, was how this crowd was going to react, and we were going to get a sample of that pretty much immediately. We're taking place from the UBS Arena on Long Island, and right off the top, it's Excalibur, Taz, and Tony Schiavone, and MJF's theme plays, and this place goes insane. Maxwell Jacob Friedman is home, but instead, CM Punk walks out to sheer hatred from this audience. What did you think about this very interesting technique that they used, which was one that many people proposed MJF should have done at the United Center in Chicago, coming out to Punk's theme? And here they almost like filed that like fan fiction away and saved it for this, for Punk to come out and be full on like a heel version of himself while still staying a babyface to everyone outside of Long Island.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think something like this is very much a tried and true heel tactic, and it told you exactly what they were going to do off the bat, that they were going to lean in on portraying CM Punk as a heel in Long Island tonight, and the reverse with MJF being the biggest hometown babyface this town has ever seen. And it worked perfectly. This crowd, I mean, I think they were going to cheer MJF either way. My big question was whether or not they were going to boo CM Punk. If Punk came out here strictly with his own music and cut a straight up babyface promo, I would wonder whether or not this crowd would have booed him. Certainly, I don't think they would have booed him.
I don't think he
would have
got anywhere like if he had just come out regular. Like they obviously felt the need to have to play this theme to establish to the audience it's okay to boo him. We want you to boo him.
Possibly, yeah. Or they could have hijacked the segment and they could have turned on him anyway once he started to talk shit about MJF.
Once you got to that point.
Instead, they leaned in on it and just decided we're going to push CM Punk as a heel tonight. And I thought it was very effective.
He gets into the ring. This crowd, they're just hating this guy. And Punk goes, "That's all you've got? Chicago is so much louder." And were you aware that there's a hockey team that plays in this area of the country, Way?
I am aware, yes.
The New York Islanders were the official punching bag of AEW on this particular night, and that is what CM Punk had here. He mocks the Islanders, who have yet to win a game in this building, and he keeps asking the fans, is this your guy? Referring to MJF, and pretty much putting over all his despicable traits, and yet this crowd is behind him, and therefore you are all guilty by association. He takes off this hoodie, and he has a Four Pillars shirt featuring Britt Baker on it, but no MJF, and says that he complimented Baker for her accomplishments. Why does that have to be turned sexual? And calls MJF an incel. He wants to be as big as Piper in Portland. He's not even as good as Piper in Hell Comes to Frogtown, which I think the crowd was almost like too loud for, because I don't think it really got to, I couldn't believe that he pulled like this reference out there. I thought it was a great line.
The heat sounded so big, and actually Brian Mann was in attendance. He told me that sometimes it was really hard to hear what the promos were.
It was like at times hard to hear from our vantage point. I could only imagine in the building that some of the lines maybe just didn't land just because it was so loud, in that, you know, they might have even gotten more upset if they could hear everything.
Have you seen Hell Comes to Frogtown? Is it that bad?
No, and it hasn't been requested yet, thank God.
The trailer looks pretty god-awful. I have not seen it either, but a great little reference here from Punk.
He then mentions how the Islanders just beat Ottawa. Saskatchewan and Ottawa references on pro wrestling programming within days of each other.
You know what? It's the world's getting smaller and smaller. And Ottawa getting some love tonight. Well, not really, but
you know what Punk kind of missed out on, though? You know who beat the Islanders on Sunday?
Who's that?
Chicago.
Okay.
Anyway,
this was a good line, though.
This was a good line, because he compared the Islanders beating the Senators to him beating QT Marshall. And
so the Ottawa Senators are the QT Marshall of the NHL. Damn. Wow. I haven't been following hockey, but that tells you everything you need to know.
I mean, Eugene Melnick in wrestler form might be QT Marshall.
Okay.
Yeah. He says that he compares MJF to Dennis Rodman, and that MJF is your worm, comparing Rodman to this person that people hated, and then they became a fan of his when he came to the Bulls in Chicago.
I thought this was brilliant. It was a brilliant way of justifying why CM Punk all of a sudden was being so nasty to these people in this city. He is strictly, you know, number one, it's tremendously entertaining to see CM Punk play a heel. But number two, it still fits into the overall narrative, because we've all had this experience, if you're a sports fan, you know, wanting to cheer the person who you know is an asshole, but he is your asshole, and therefore it's right to cheer them, at least, you know, in your vicinity. And so CM Punk absolutely made it understandable why he would be so mean tonight.
So Punk mentions how he wants to face the winner of Hangman Page and Danielson, and assumes that MJF also wants the winner, so they have to fight. And the crowd is trying to drown him out, and he says how MJF stooped so low to bring Larry into all of this when Larry has more balls than MJF.
I you know, it was kind of hard to hear what they were cheering, but I think it sounded something like, fuck your pizza.
Is that what they were chanting? Because I couldn't make it out either.
I could be wrong, but
that's
just
a good chant, though.
I mean, Chicago versus what, Long Island style pizza? I suppose it's New York style pizza.
I can't speak on Long Island pizza. I've never been technically on Long Island.
I've never been either.
Yeah. Punk is at this, dude, Punk is having the time of his life. Like, he is laughing that he is having so much fun with this crowd. And says that the Islanders haven't won anything since 1984. It was like the Islanders were just like the mat to step on whenever he needed just another shot.
Well, honestly, though, what else are you going to pick on? Like, what else comes to mind for Long Island? You know, it's kind of difficult to find these targets. And you have a team that
right there is a pretty good promo way. I don't have anything else to make fun of you, because you don't have anything but this god awful hockey team.
Listen, we're from Canada. Like, we're kind of used to it, right? But I am looking at this like
There's plenty to make fun of us, though. We have a long list of stuff that people can attack us on.
But I'm looking at this record of this poor hockey team, and he's absolutely right. No Stanley Cup.
The 80s were a wonderful time. Like, you pay it up front. You know what? There's a price for that incredible run they had, and it turns out it's been 3 decades worth.
Yeah, I know, but how long are you going to wait? Like, this is almost as long of a drought as the Leafs, you know? And it's kind of like you become an easy target at that point. 30 years?
They had that awful rebranding of their logo in the 90s. Remember that with the fisherman on it?
Long John Silver.
Oh, they've gone through
some Captain
horrible.
Highliner, I mean. Yeah.
I feel we're going to get a lot of response. We're going to find out how many listeners we have in this part of New York. So he says that he doesn't want MJF to run like you do in Long Island, but instead to fight like we do in Chicago. And he's willing to fight MJF tonight. But if that's your guy who you back, then you're all chicken shit. And that's how he ended this.
Man, there were even shut the fuck up chants for CM Punk. And again, that's not something I really would have expected. Even
if I had told you in September that there is going to be an episode of Dynamite where Danielson and Punk are going to be the most over heels in an AEW, like before the end of the year, they're going to be there. Like, I think you could imagine that at some point I could see them both. But that quick that here we have both of them for at least one night. Where both were your one and two heels on the show.
Completely, totally. But it's also not that crazy because, you know, we're talking about an AEW crowd that I think knows that they are part of the show, you know, and knows that they are here to give, I think, for the most part, intended reactions that the show demands. And it was clear from the beginning of the show that they were demanding that this crowd boo CM Punk.
So that that finished up the segment. It was a great opening segment. I thought it was like a lot of fun, and it was refreshing to not see this. Oh, we've got to fight the crowd, or we've got to send out MJF before the show to tell everybody the cameras aren't rolling. Don't embarrass me on TV. You know what I mean? Like they knew they were going to get this reaction, so let's just make the best of it. Like, sometimes the best receptions are when the crowd goes a different way, and it's totally logical why they would in this scenario. Like, this is our guy, and for one night, the roles are reversed, and next week, Punk will be a babyface when they're in Texas, and you're right back on track, and we'll get into the MJF chapter of the show, but I thought they handled him tremendously well.
It also makes the location part of the attraction of a show. You know, these aren't cookie cutter shows where one show is going to look the same. And if the crowd's not going to react the same, we're going to try to force them to react the same as any other crowd. No, just like in sports, you know, anytime you're in any enemy territory, the dynamics are going to be a bit different. And it makes, in this case, the performances completely different. On this certain night, you know, we could be seeing CM Punk versus MJF in a promo battle again, but they're going to take on different roles, with one being a heel and one being a babyface, depending on the crowd that's going to cheer for them. So it adds, I think, a really interesting dynamic as an exercise in professional wrestling performance. It's a lot more fun to see. So this was another very memorable segment in a string of these in this program so far.
After the break, we have this tremendous video package where this Ferrari pulls up in, and there's this elaborate voiceover explaining that the difference between a hero and a villain is perspective. As MJF emerges from this Ferrari in his plain view bomber jacket, walks onto the football field. I mean, this thing looked like this looked like a car commercial, like a high-end car commercial you'd see right before the movie's about to begin. The whole place is chanting for MJF. Like, this just, if there was any reluctance of the fan base of how are we supposed to react to this guy, this was as much of a clear wink from AEW. Go absolutely insane for this dude. And that is what they did as he came out for the Dynamite Dozen Battle Royal. And it felt like where you took somebody in the video game and you gave him like the top babyface's mannerisms and he just played a completely different character. He comes out, he's doing like,
he did the Punk entrance.
He did the Punk entrance where he's like wrapping his wrists around. He's going up to the fans. He's slapping hands. It was just amazing to watch.
In, there was one moment. I mean, I don't know if this was part parody or of the CM Punk Chicago entrance, or if this was just
it was totally parody where he's on the knees.
Wait. But there was one moment when he walks out where, like, you almost got the sense that he had some real emotion in his face looking at this crowd cheering for him. I mean, this was a home, a real homecoming for the guy.
I'm sure this was like a huge night for him in his career, that I'm sure he took this in, that this was...
And it was just rare to see, because this is a guy who, like, 24/7 feels like he stays in character so much and never really lets on that there's any sort of, like, you know, crowd reaction that really phases him. But there is a moment here where you could at least buy that he was genuinely feeling, you know, the this wonderful hometown reaction.
Well, we got a question on Ask Away about, do you ever think that you could get a babyface run out of MJF? And both of us were completely adamant, 100%, this guy.
Look, he was the most over babyface tonight, you know? So absolutely, you already have the proof.
Like, when you have a hated villain, it's the most easy turn that finally your fans are, like, allowed to have this guy on our side. It's like the Dennis Rodman analogy is, like, it's a perfect one. That it's like, you may despise this player when he's against you, but when he's getting all those rebounds for us and creating hell for everyone, it's like, then we love this guy.
I mean, this is the WWE playbook of how they build baby faces. They're vanilla to start off with no character, and then they decide to turn them heel, and then they get an edge, and they get some authenticity attached to them, and the crowd wants to turn them babyface, and that's what they do, except now they skip the whole babyface part, and we just have a really hot heel.
So what would you do in this battle royal way where your big villain is suddenly your big babyface? Now, how do we get the heat? That's a more complicated great formula. Question. Like, do you beat this guy, but he's the villain in his hometown for the heat?
You know, that's a math problem so complicated that I would leave it up to more capable hands.
Yeah. So the Dynamite Dozen Battle Royal, the participants besides MJF are Dante Martin, Leo Rush, Matt Hardy, Lee Moriarty, Matt Sydal, Lee Johnson, Wardlow, Hobbs, Frankie Kazarian, Ricky Starks, and Jay Lethal. Sean Spears is also out there in the corner of MJF and Wardlow and saves MJF early on. We got a bunch of eliminations. Wardlow dumped out Moriarty, followed by Sydal. The Bunny passed brass knuckles to Matt Hardy, who clocks Lethal and throws him out just like nothing. Dante then shoves Matt out from behind, and Leo Rush confronts Dante. Hobbs and Wardlow square off. Hobbs ends up on the edge of the apron, and Leo Rush knocks him off with a handspring. They go through the break. MJF is playing to the crowd, and then he goes to hide behind Wardlow in the corner. Leo's trying to get to him, and he is booed for his efforts. Rush and Lee Johnson then double drop kick Wardlow and send him to the apron. They're trying to get him out when MJF comes from behind. It's like the Shawn Michaels diesel spot in the Royal Rumble. And MJF sends both of all three men over, including Wardlow. And then Spears has to play middleman here between Wardlow and MJF. I thought that was a really smart spot because I didn't think they needed to go all the way and make Wardlow and MJF the final two. That's way too early to do that. This was like the perfect advancement of that to continue this like simmering issue with Wardlow that maybe is going to happen quicker than we think.
Perhaps, yeah. But, you know, the moment that they need to, they can execute that turn at any point. But for now, it just kind of keeps it simmering.
MJF just ducks and Frankie Kazarian flies out of here like Sean Stasiak. And then it's Starks and Dante of Team Taz left with MJF. Dante takes off the armband for Team Taz. He turns on Starks, tosses him out. Taz is on commentary. He's pissed. MJF celebrates. They shake hands. There's a chant that is led by MJF. And Dante does shake his hand. Before we get to the post-match, what did you think mainly about how MJF was used here and also having Dante already turn on Team Taz?
Well, I thought as a battle royal, I actually found it pretty entertaining. You know, I think AEW battle royals have really come a long way since the first pre-show that we saw for that pay-per-view. And I feel like they're a whole lot more organized right now. And of course, it helps when you have characters that are a lot more ingrained in the audience, and stories that are a lot more captivating than the non-stories that we had in some of those first battle royals. But I felt like they did a good job of, like, you know, continuing to build the Team Taz Leo Rush rivalry. I was surprised at how fast we got this Dante Martin turn. I mean, it feels like as fast as we got him turning to join Team Taz, we got the resolution of it immediately here.
This was 2 weeks?
If that. I mean, what was it? Like, I can't even keep track of it, and that's also to say that I don't think about it that much. You know, I think it's largely been a pretty ineffective story, mini story, that I don't know how many people bought in the first place, and then I didn't think this turn was all that. Like, it was not that big of a holy shit moment. In fact, it just felt like they got to it too soon. And as far as MJF goes, I mean, you know, anytime he had the advantage, it was really fascinating to see, like, you know, this crowd would be cheering for Leo Rush, but as soon as he went to try to throw MJF over the top, they were immediately booing Leo Rush. So anytime he had the ball, so to speak, in terms of attention in this battle royal, this crowd was, like, really coming alive. I was ultimately a little disappointed that, like, there wasn't a bigger moment for MJF here, because the nature of this battle royal, it indicates that the final two go on to have the match rather than having somebody actually win something, you know, like, concretely coming out of this. And for as big of a stage as I think MJF had, I didn't think it would have been such a bad idea to move that match up tonight so that you would have both the battle royal and an actual outcome for the match in front of this wonderful crowd.
Yeah, this is a tough concept, this version of the battle royal, because, yeah, you don't have that climactic winner. It's the final two, and that's how it has to end. So it's a tough way to end a match, but I thought at least, I guess, they gave people the turn here by Dante, and ultimately MJF was, you know, front and center throughout all of this. Starks comes back and attacks Dante, and as MJF's going up the ramp, he's looking back, he's looking, should I help him? No. He walks up, hesitates again, and then finally sprints down, and the crowd is just so excited at his ethics being on display. And he confronts Ricky Starks, gets right into their face, and then both men proceed to double team and stomp Dante. Punk runs down, tons of boos, MJF bails, and Punk gets into Stark's face, helps up Dante, and we get an enziguri by Dante into the GTS as Punk kind of helps up Dante here to end the segment, and that was our involvement of MJF and Punk for the night.
Seeing MJF play with that tension, you know, as he's waking his way up the ramp and then deciding to run back down and then turning again was a whole lot of fun to watch. Do you think we get to a tag team match for this? And when?
Yeah, because I'm thinking Punk and MJF. I think the date I would aim to put that one on would be the first TBS show. I'd do that January 5th. That would be my pick. So in the meantime, I think, yeah, we could do the tag. And that seemed like the whole purpose of this, to come out where Punk's got an ally and MJF has, you know, Sean Spears, or you could use Ricky Starks. Even you could have him involved in this temporarily.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's what I would think. You could even be a six man, you know, with some of the other players from, like, Team Taz or whatever,
right?
Involved as well.
Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, and Varsity Blondes against the Acclaimed and 2.0. Christian comes out. He whispers some advice to Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, and then he just heads to the back. Very, very short night of work for Christian. Julia Hart, she'd have plenty tonight. Then the Acclaimed are out. Max gets a pop because he's from Long Island and says they're going to take an L like the Islanders. These poor Islanders. At this point, I just, God have mercy on this poor team.
Again, I'm trying to tell you, like, how many targets are there does Long Island have, you know?
Obviously not too many. I didn't need any more Islanders insults after this.
So wait a second. So he is the hometown guy.
Yeah, he's making fun of the team. He hates his own team.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, Torontonians make fun of, like, you know, whatever team we have that's not doing so well at the time.
I always loved the one that Jericho did here in Toronto when he was in WCW, and he came down and he just said about, it's so great to be back home, walking down Queen Street. He's like all the easy things, naming all the landmarks, and everyone pops like, oh my God, he knows that street name. And he says, it made me look up into the beautiful sky and think to myself, God, I'm glad I moved to Florida. And it was just being in the arena that night. It was like, it was an awesome, like, just pull the carpet out from under everyone at the end. Mm-hmm. So the match. Oh, and he finishes the promo, the rap by stating that Jungle Boy still can't cut a promo. Will run your bitch ass out of town like Cuomo.
Very timely.
Garrison hits a dive over the top, and then they lift up. They lift Caster up for a high drop kick from Pillman. And then they got the heat on Pillman for a long time. The crowd's chanting for Luchasaurus, and finally, Pillman blasts through the Acclaimed. Like, you know, when you'd play like Red Rover, that's like what he did here. He just ran through the arms here and broke the grip.
I don't think I ever played that.
Did you ever play that? We played a lot of violent games in school. You ever play? Did you ever hear of Redwall, which was when the teachers were around, it was called Redwall. When they were gone, it was called Red Ass.
Oh, okay. No, never heard of it. What is it?
You'd throw the ball against the wall and everyone would try to catch it. And it's like you'd get a point if you caught it. But if you dropped the ball, you'd get a letter. And if you ended up spelling Red Ass, such a terrible game. I don't know why we were allowed to play it or... Anyway, so the loser, there would be one loser who would have to stand up against the wall, put his back towards everyone, and each player got a chance to whip the tennis ball. It was a tennis ball as hard as they could at your ass.
That's worse.
Yeah, it was
like
not
we were
good.
Talking like a voight ball. Like I'd probably dodgeball itself is a violent game. Is
yeah.
It not?
Yeah. But anyway.
But red ass? Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And the aim wasn't always good. Some people would like just hit kids in like, you know, the back, hopefully not the head. Terrible. Don't play this game. Jungle Boy goes for the snare trap when Daniel Garcia is getting on the apron. Eddie Kingston is out in his DMX hoodie. This was a nice hoodie.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
He yanks down Garcia. The crowd's going nuts for Kingston. Caster misses a mic drop, is put in the snare trap, and submits to Jungle Boy in 8:52. Then Eddie Kingston is waving the cameraman to the back where he's with Ortiz. And unfortunately, we got an Eddie Kingston promo that no one could hear. There was no audio attached to this. Then Garcia and 2.0 attack, and I'm sure this would have come off much better if we had heard the promo, but this was just a technical nightmare.
Yeah, unfortunate. Maybe, I don't know, somebody with some backstage cell phone footage might have caught it, but maybe just a bit of miscommunication there on the technical side of things.
But maybe 2.0 on their show can say how they...
they can subtitle it.
Yeah, they can say that they screwed
dub it over.
Yeah, with the team.
Yeah, I love the fact that we're just getting Santana and Ortiz teaming with Eddie Kingston. I think it references a lot of the history that, you know, most audiences may have seen or at least would be understandably aware of. And no real explanation needed. Like, they're friends.
Well yeah. None was given, not by choice, but we got no explanation.
Yeah, but okay, cool. 2.0 and Daniel Garcia versus Kingston and Santana and Ortiz. That sounds awesome.
FTR and Tully Blanchard. Blanchard says how they're going to become two-time AEW tag champions and mention their win on Saturday in Monterey. The Lucha Brothers have never beaten them. The only time they did, it was a fluke, and the wrong man was pinned, that being a reference to Full Gear. And they state that this Friday night, it's the biggest match of their career, and for Dax Harwood, this is going to pay for his mortgage and take care of Christmas. So a lot at stake on Friday.
I don't want to boo this man. He's got a mortgage on the line.
I want him and his family to have a wonderful Christmas. So I think that does kind of sway things on the side of FTR here.
Well, Christmas is probably on the line for the Lucha Brothers as well. You know, so who
that would probably be a more interesting stip than even like the tag titles or this is not two out of three falls. This is just one fall to a finish for the tag titles.
Who
on
gets
Friday.
To celebrate? It should have been
Christmas.
It should have been this Christmas on a pole ladder match on. Last weekend.
It could have been, yeah. Just have like a...
They should be fighting for the right to eat al pastor. They should be restoring the right to eat al pastor. That should be what's on the line.
We need less stipulations in pro wrestling, I think. Yeah. I think that's maybe the answer. The Young Bucks versus Chuck Taylor and Rocky Romero. This turned into an incredibly entertaining match and a huge payoff at the end as well. Mm-hmm. So Rocky Romero was in for a lot of the early going here with both members of the Bucks. Chuck Taylor landed a tope con hero, and then he's just laughing his way down the ramp way right into a double super kick. The Bucks then auditioned for Kid Street doing the overhead clap, and this set up their spot where they slide to the floor and kiss Adam Cole on the cheek. They go through picture in picture. Were you a Kid Street viewer?
No, I wasn't.
That show. Oh, no, my God.
No. I was not playing Red Ass nor watching Kid Street.
I can't believe you did not watch Kid Street.
I don't even know. Like, was it a Canadian show? Or
is anyone in the chat room Kid Street viewers?
Kid Street chat room. Anybody?
I guarantee you Brandon's seen it.
Is it?
You got to watch the show. They would do the clap. They would clap. They'd always have to clap with their hands above their head, and it always was the silliest looking clap. But they always did it that way.
Well, I mean, you want to, it looks better on camera, I suppose. You know, maybe when you're trying to instruct an audience to clap, you would clap over.
They were also in cars, so there might have been a logistical issue of like where to place your arms and get optimum clapping.
Was this like a CBC show?
I want to say Global. It was on Global, I think.
Oh, okay. Global. No, I don't. I never saw it. I might have not even been in the country when that was here. What about the, you remember Kideo?
I saw Kideo in person when I was like 7.
You saw Kideo in person?
Yeah, my
Damn.
Mom took me to see Kideo. K-I-D-E-O. We are Kideo.
Those dudes scared the shit out of me.
They were Holy. Scary looking. I actually, when I first saw them, I thought that they were Kiss. And then,
yeah, I think that's what
because somehow
for.
I was aware of Kiss when I was 7. And when I saw them, I thought like there was some like, this must be Kiss. Like, there's 4 of them. This is just, like, different makeup.
Yeah, it was, like, the multicolored Kiss. You know, the red, green, and blue Kiss. Yeah, no, they were scary as hell.
Was it 2? Was it 3 or 4 of them?
It was red, blue, and green.
Okay, so it was 3 of them.
I wonder if those guys still have careers. Like they could pass for, like, a real, like, you know, death metal band right now. Looking like this.
Let me see here. Like, dude, Kideo in concert, 2014 is what comes up. 2017, wow. There's a video. This is like a retro Ontario video.
How do we know this is the genuine Kideo?
Do you know what Kideo stood for?
Oh, it's an acronym? I had no idea. No,
it's not a good acronym, actually. Kideo TV. So it's a syndicated anthology packaging.
Buddy Goodfellow on bass, Ace Manners on guitar, and PJ Styles on drums. PJ Styles.
PJ Styles. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, there you go. I don't think Kideo is playing at any local gyms as we speak. But there you go. That's your deep dive for the evening, listeners. Back to the Young Bucks and Taylor and Romero. So after the forever clotheslines, Romero, he was just great here. Double Rana to the Bucks, then a leaping one off the steps to Nick. Matt does the rolling Northern Lights, but on the last one, Romero turns it into a tornado DDT. Cutler's in with the cold spray, and with the referee distracted, Adam Cole enters. Cassidy comes from behind, and again with the limp kicks that do nothing, and he's just like there sitting prey for a Nick super kick, and he's just taken out.
Yeah, like these past couple weeks, they've really just... I mean, Orange Cassidy has always been a very tongue-in-cheek character, of course, but like he's at least like not just taken damage for like little effort. I mean, or at least for no, like he's put up more of a fight in the past, you know. In the past couple weeks, just feels like he's just walking in on these attacks and
the,
almost
the
kinda...
AEW version. It's always that he is trying to mess with you with like his offense. In this, it's like, what is the purpose of this? You're coming from behind a guy and doing the weak kicks, and then you're just sitting prey, and it just, like, he comes off like he's outsmarted himself.
He is often, I mean, often he creates the punchline, but in the past couple of weeks, it feels like he is the punchline. You know, he's sort of like the comedy, like the, I realize what's coming out of my mouth and I'm talking about Orange Cassidy and it sounds ridiculous, but I do
know. No, but dude, like,
difference.
It is, like, it's a character that does, like, there is a consistency to it. Like, they have, like, a reasonable explanation of, like, why he does this stuff in the body of a match. And they don't have the guy sell for the kicks either.
He's usually smarter. Like, it's usually somewhat part of a strategy. In the past couple of weeks, he's just kind of come out.
He's getting outsmarted. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, it's an interesting change.
So, Taylor and Cassidy are both taken out with super kicks. Romero ducks and Brandon Cutler sprays the cold spray into Matt's eyes, chucks back with a pile driver, jackknife cover, near fall. Sliced bread gets stopped. Matt has him up for the tombstone and then runs into Nick, and Romero turns into a backslide. This crowd went insane. They totally believe the best friends are going to beat the Young Bucks here. And then there's a pump handle back into the tombstone position. The Bucks finally hit the Meltzer driver with Matt pinning Romero. But this was a super entertaining match.
It really was. I mean, anytime you get the Bucks, of course, in one of these matches, it's bound to be, you know, really high quality, really fun match. But for me, it was definitely more so the post-match that I think will be remembered coming out of this.
Yes, so Cole and the Young Bucks continue to attack. Cole is stomping down Cassidy. Wheeler Yuta runs in. He gets leveled with a super kick. Panama Sunrise is hit to Cassidy, and as they set up for the BTE trigger, suddenly the Best Friends music plays, and they're all looking around. They're all out here. The minivan appears. Sue drives out Trent, a man that was doing media this week, stating, "I don't know when I'll be back. I've just got to wait. I've got to wait for this neck to rehabilitate itself." And there is Trent, who gets out, shaved head. He's got the Kendall Roy look, and he is back from neck fusion surgery. How do we know he's back from neck fusion surgery? Dude hits a spear, his very first match back. This guy has more bravery than I would ever have in this field. If I got my neck redone, spear is the last thing I'm doing. That one's gone. That one's off the list.
Yeah, but it's like getting on a bike, I suppose. You know,
it's like the Brian Danielson one when he told Luke Harper to give me this half and half. I got to test this neck out. Mm-hmm. He cleans house. This crowd's going insane. And they have this shot of Sue watching from the ramp with Chris Statlander. And then they do the hug. Everyone goes insane. This was awesome. This was just a fantastic return and one that nobody, I think, expected.
Yeah.
Like, this guy was literally, he was like on Barstool. Like, Andrew has like the transcript of it where he's, "I don't know when I'll be back." And I don't think anyone was really thinking at all about the idea of him coming back.
Well, this sort of neck surgery, when was he out? Do you remember, John, off the top of your head?
I can't remember the exact month.
But I mean, I had no mental timeline for, you know, when he was set to come back, nor was I, you know, actively thinking about it all that much. But I certainly didn't expect it tonight.
July.
Okay, so, I mean, that's
a crazy turnaround. Dude, neck fusion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So either the technology has gotten really good, or this man has incredible recuperative powers, or maybe it was, you know, a slightly different type of fusion than what we had in the past, but a much earlier return than I think you and I have expected. And the man looks great with a shaved head. Looks way better with a shaved head, you know, like than the bandana thing he had going on. Looks to me, actually looks like, and clearly has been working out as well as part of his rehabilitation, of course. He looks a lot more like, I would say, a top star, you know, looking like this. So I didn't know this guy was from Long Island, too. Like, how many people are from Long Island on this roster? He's like, dude, half the roster's from Long Island.
It's like all the guys from like Create a Pro, you know? Brian Myers and Pat Buck, they've got like a whole army of guys.
There you go.
So there you go. I found that June 26th, he put out the tweet that he had had cervical spinal fusion, as Michael Sampson put it. So there you go. He is back. Yeah, this was a great segment. Really, really worth checking out. Match and the post-match.
Cool.
Alex Marvez interviewed Ruby Soho, who was confronted by The Bunny and Penelope Ford, and said that they were told that after Nyla Rose wins the title, that the two of them will be first in line for title shots. So this has somehow set up a challenge where Ford, The Bunny, and Nyla will take on Ruby and two friends on Rampage. But she has no friends. She's Ruby solo, as they laugh. And Ruby starts to fight, and then Nyla appears and drops Ruby and gets saved by Ty Conti and Anna Jay wielding chairs.
So presumably those are the match.
The match on Friday. Yes.
Those are the friends. I mean, yes.
She's got friends. Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
Shivani's with Sammy Guevara in front of the crowd and gets interrupted by Cody Rhodes, who was just hated on this show.
I don't know if there was one interview that went off without an interruption on this show.
Not often. No one is, you know, maybe that is what should be at stake. You get 5 minutes uninterrupted if you win like this next tournament.
How about an interview like on the roof or like with a inside a closed door room or something, you know?
Yeah, they should send in their promos, like tape them in advance, like Malakai Black, so you know you're not going to get interrupted.
True, right.
Unless the audio is not working. So Cody comes out. His arm looks an absolute mess.
Like, yeah, like it not.
I can't imagine what his back looks like. Like we saw the one photo of it. I can't imagine what it looks like 7 days later.
There's something very different looking about, you know, a wrestling scar, maybe a welt from a kendo stick, and a burn mark. And this dude had like, ugh. I just continue to ask why, honestly. Like, why? Anyway.
Tony Khan made it official that Sammy's next defense of the title for his open challenge will be against Cody. And Cody just leans in and says, good luck, kid. And yeah, they get interrupted.
Well, hold on. Before that, Cody comes out here and he had the line saying from one good guy to the next. And then he actually teased walking through the heel entrance before he turned around and walked back up the babyface entrance. So definitely continuing to play with those expectations.
I really wish that after all of this, it comes down to which exit ramp you take off the stage.
Yeah.
That confirms it.
It's not something I always pay attention to, but I suppose there is some consistency with it. And Cody deliberately referencing it, it tells you that, I don't know, like maybe we'll get confirmation somehow.
Does Cody always come out of like the one designated for the babyface? Because he usually is like right there. He has his own special entrance.
True, you're right. Yeah, but which one does he walk back in?
See, I'm not going to feel guilty that I do not follow like which way they exit. I don't make enough to care about that detail.
No, I don't either.
So
somebody,
Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky are in the. Did you have any more on the promo? Okay, so they're laughing in the crowd. About how Cody is jumping the line and what happened to Ethan Page's title match because he had to jump through all these hoops to get a title match. But he's not an EVP and basically says that Cody kisses Tony Khan's ass. Dan Lambert was the one who got me my title shot and Dan Lambert is coming back. Sky then accuses Sammy of not facing top guys in the top five and you need to prove that you're a champion. So it looks like Sammy Guevara has no less than like three matches set up for this TNT title.
Yeah, this part, I mean, well, the big match, of course, is Cody versus Sammy Guevara for the Christmas show. And that's worth mentioning at this point.
Did they state it's for the Christmas show?
I think that's what Cody said on Christmas.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I missed that line. That's important.
Yeah. But, you know, like, is the Page match going to be a title defense too? Or just a match? I mean, if he's ranked, shouldn't it be a title match?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of got the impression here it'd be Scorpio Sky.
Is it Sky? We're totally screwed.
I mean, they both did promos here.
Page complaining about not getting the shot or not getting.
But he did get a shot. He said he had to go through all these hoops to get it.
You're right. Okay.
So I don't. I mean, he got his shot and he lost. And yeah. Neither of these two are even in the top five as I'm looking this up. So, Scorpio Sky's number three. So, yeah, that would make sense. Scorpio Sky.
Right.
All right. Then we had a feature on Thunder Rosa and Jade Cargill building up their TNT title match or TNT tournament match. And that takes us to Jamie Hayter against Riho. Baker is in the corner along with Rebel and is attacking Riho behind Aubrey's back. Riho comes back with a tiger faint kick and a high cross as Hayter has to regroup on the floor. But Riho doesn't want to give her the opportunity to regroup, so she climbs up to the top and goes for a high cross to the floor. Jamie Hayter completely misses the catch. This poor woman, Riho, just bounces off of her and lands on the floor. And then Hayter just has to lift her up and drives her into the post. I mean, it just looked awful.
It did, yeah, yeah. I mean, it did play into the story, though. You know, why would you want to break your opponent's fall if they're falling? Let them fall down, then you can pick them up and drive them into the post afterwards.
This was just like, this was like watching Riho jump at a wall just crumble to the floor. So Hayter is just beating her down, is attacking the back, and then Riho lands a double foot stomp to slow down Hayter. But again, it's Hayter going back with a brain buster. At one point, she lifts her up and hits the nastiest backbreaker over her knee. Rio's just tremendous at selling, and she's just so tiny that you just – it's a tremendous dynamic that works against anyone because she is tinier than anyone in this division.
But especially somebody like Jamie Hayter, who I think like wrestles a powerhouse style really well, and you know she looks that much bigger. And her wrestling is that much, like, is that good, you know, in order to make her moves probably look a lot more devastating than they probably feel. But both of these have, together were fantastic.
Riho mounts a comeback with a flying knee and a code red for a near fall, hits a double foot stomp off the top for another near fall, and then Rebel grabs Riho, stopping her on the turnbuckle. Riho capitalizes, as they're fighting on the turnbuckle, Riho turns it into a avalanche crucifix bomb and follows with the running knees and wins the match. This turned into a really good match, especially down the end here.
I totally agree. I thought it was fantastic, you know. And Riho sold the victory crying afterwards. This was not a title match, you know. This was not even a match against the champion, which she had the last time. This was against the champion's friend. But yet, it felt so hard-earned. And the match, I think, was so convincing in its devastation that you can justifiably understand why she would cry after this. It felt like that... It felt like this title match that she's about to get is that much more earned. And I thought she, through this match, gained a whole lot of crowd attention behind her ahead of the title challenge. Jamie Hayter did a great job. You know, both of these two continue to really impress me. But Jamie Hayter, since her, you know, inclusion into the company lately, I think is really like above much of the pack in this company as far as her ability and talent goes. But these two are great together. You know, one an awesome powerhouse with great versatile moves, and the other arguably the best underdog in the entire division who is able to make all those big moves look so good. So it was a really easy to understand David Goliath story, and I thought it was really well executed.
And then Riho, with tears coming down her face, told the crowd that I am so incredibly honored to be one of the rare people that can call themselves a winner in this building. No, I'm kidding. That would have been great. Because the Islanders are terrible.
Yeah.
Baker attacks Riho, applies the lockjaw, and says she will never be champion again. So I'm looking forward to this match when they finally do it, whether it's Battle of the Belts or beforehand.
I mean, I feel like Battle of the Belts would make sense, don't you?
I think so. Like, it's... You would want a women's championship match on there. I don't know how this Battle of the Belts is quite going to work.
Yeah, is it 1 hour? Like, still slated to be 1 hour?
Looks like they have not officially said it's an hour, but it's like it seems like they are at least working on that. I would say it's its own live event. It's not like they're going to be taping this in advance. So right. Regardless, I would imagine they're going to do like they'll stream on top of it. And then if they have to only have an hour, then you go live for an hour. But I'm sure it's going to be like a whole, you know, 3 hour show. Hmm. So here's the upcoming matches that we've got for Rampage on Friday, the Lucha Brothers against FTR with Christmas on the line, Nyla Rose, The Bunny, and Penelope Ford against Ruby Soho, Ty Conti, and Anna Jay, and Adam Cole against Wheeler Yuta. But forget about all of that. Even with Christmas at stake, the main event of the year, Taz announces Fuego del Sol one-on-one with Hook on Rampage.
You think these ratings are slipping in professional wrestling, everybody? Hook is about to save professional wrestling during the holidays, okay? The industry is going to come alive once again. No, seriously, though. Like, he is a bit of a meme, you know, on the internet, but there is, I would say, genuine anticipation for what this kid is about to look like. And I am hearing from a live report from a friend, Brian Mann, that was there, who is saying he looked impressive. So I look forward to the match even more now.
Did you hear what his tagline is that Taz gave him?
Yes, I did. It's great.
He is all that and a bag of chips.
Love it. Love it. I think they're very clearly right. They're very clearly aware of, I think, whatever momentum online that this kid has. They're making a big deal out of his debut. And now it's up to the performer, Hook, himself to, you know, prove whether or not he is just a joke of a meme or if he's an actual star in the making in the future. And I think they're going to try everything they can to try to make him more of the latter and be treated as a serious wrestler. So I'm curious.
Then they go into the announcement confirming their next pay-per-view, Revolution, will be on Sunday, March the 6th from the Edition Financial Arena. And they're going to do a whole weekend. They'll do a live Rampage on March the 4th, a fan fest on March 5th, and then the pay-per-view on Sunday night with tickets going on sale next week. So it is a long way until the next pay-per-view.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
And winter is coming. Hangman Page, Bryan Danielson, MJF against Dante Martin for the ring, and Serena Deeb versus Hikaru Shida that they had a video preview for. So three matches announced thus far, and I'm very curious to see how long Hangman and Danielson goes.
Oh, man. What do you think? 30? At least?
I think it has to go at least 30.
I think so, too. Do you think it's possible they start the show with it?
Yes. Especially if they wanted to, like, go a draw.
You're right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And they could come back with the match at Battle of the Belts or or any other show.
Okay, I didn't think about that. Yeah, interesting.
Shivani is out with the Varsity Blondes and Julia Hart. That should have been your tip-off that an angle is coming. Because they don't even get a word out before they are interrupted by Malakai Black, who comes out and spits the black mist into the face of Julia Hart.
How could you? Come on. Listen, I love the mist, all right? I love, like, Pac wrestling with both eyes blinded. I think that's just awesome. But poor little Julia Hart should not be anywhere near this danger. And now she's going to be blinded. What did she do to deserve this blinding from this demon? This Satanist?
Well, now we're going to get maybe Julia Hart coming back with, like, vengeance.
So she's going to be blinded, right? Is she going to have to wrestle with an eye patch?
There's no way she can have vision if Pac does not.
Does she turn? Like, does she join Aleister Black? Does she join the House of Black?
I don't want this to become Alexa Bliss.
No, I don't think that. I don't think that'll happen.
That's what I do not want to see.
But do we get a dark version of Julia Hart?
Maybe it's going to, like, screw up her whole psyche, and she's going to believe she's a member of the Hearts now.
That's what the mist does?
Yes.
It makes you think you're...
It has different effects on different folks. You lost your sight. Julia lost, like, her memory.
So which of the Hearts will she be? Like, will she be, like, the Brett's generation or one of the grandkids? Or
maybe like, Maddie's? Every week she'll be, like, a different one. She's going to come back next week as, like, Bruce.
She will come back as Martha. Or, sorry, as Helen Hart. The reincarnation of Helen Hart.
Let's move on. Bryan Danielson and John Silver is the main event. Silver comes out with the Dark Order. You know what I found to be a bit of a trend for all of these? Where, like, they would come out, except for MJF, they would come out, and it's like a subdued, like... You know, it's someone coming out, and it wasn't until they said from Long Island, and then it's like, then they would, like, embrace them. It's like they need a confirmation of, you better still be billed from here.
Yeah, a reminder. I mean, all they have to do is come out with an Islanders hat or jersey.
No one did. No one did.
No, even they have their limits.
Not a good night for the Islanders. Alan Angels is out here on crutches, and the whole place starts chanting Johnny Hungy at the beginning of this, and Bryan Danielson just played a prick for the entire match. He is controlling Silver and just playing with the crowd. Who's the best? Just doing all the heel antics. He's being counted in the corner. Come on, Johnny. And telling Bryce, I have until 5. I mean, just all the classics here. Silver catches him in a heel hook, and Danielson has to kick his way free and dive towards the rope to get free. And then Silver hits him with a flurry of kicks, a German, but Danielson lands on his feet and lands a head kick, pronouncing, too easy. He goes for the Busaiku knee, and it's countered with a roll-up, and then Silver lands a knee to the back of the head, bridging German by Silver, and goes for the spin doctor that is stopped with an eye rake, and Danielson beats him down with elbows and hits the Gotch pile driver before he applies this submission, which was not identified, nor did they shoot it very clearly to be able to tell what he was doing. So I didn't even get like a good sense of like what he was actually applying pressure to, because they shot it like from behind.
Yeah, it was hard to see from our vantage point, but it looked like some sort of like grounded full Nelson. Like it seemed like he was, and I think like,
yeah, like a half Nelson or something. Yeah.
And with the Gotch preceding it, I mean, I took it less as like a reference to Minoru Suzuki, more of a reference to Frank Gotch himself, you know? Mm-hmm. So it almost feels like rather than like using like any sort of MMA offense this time around, he was using some maybe catch. That's how it played.
I would love the idea of like all these guys in the back that like are watching whatever. And it's like, who are you like, who's really influencing you? Frank Gotch. I'm studying Frank Gotch for this heel run.
Yeah, like it's totally up his wheelhouse. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, there you go. He gets the submission win, and Danielson recaps all the Dark Order members whose heads he has kicked in, going through Evil Uno, Colt, Angels, and now Silver, but realizes he has not yet kicked in John Silver's head, and I am a man of my word. And as he starts to stomp the head, Hangman Page runs down, Danielson retreats, and the show ends with Hangman proclaiming that next week, I'm going to stomp the cowboy shit out of you. So great ending, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, like no surprise, of course, like it's the exact type of story that they've been telling. And this was, you know, the last of a sequence heading into the match next week. It's been a really appealing set of matches leading up to a program.
I was pretty upset though. I wanted to be surprised, and I thought they should have given us the swerve. That would have been so much better.
How would they have swerved us here? John Silver winning?
Exactly.
Why. Hometown guy winning though?
I'm being sarcastic, and I know I have to explain that, but it was like for people that always claim about like, oh, it's so predictable. It's like you could have been like, there was no other finish to this match, and that's how it was built. There was no real like doubt of any of these Dark Order matches for the last 4 weeks.
Yeah,
and they went through them, and you've built up the match that much more.
I mean, having any of them do well and like beating Bray would have taken away from the match, like from your ultimate destination. So I mean, that was never part of the consideration, I'm sure. But yeah, a very enjoyable episode of Dynamite with a very electric audience, especially for the MJF Punk segment.
Yeah, like you brought this up in the news update. This did not look like the biggest AEW lineup for a Dynamite, I should stipulate. But I thought like this show, certainly like if you were just looking at the lineup and, you know, you tune in just out of habit, boy, I think you were rewarded on this show with so many things that were not advertised, but that you got out of it from the Punk segment, the return of Trent. And, you know, just it was a very easy show to watch, as most Dynamites are. And, you know, it just seems like they set up Danielson and Hangman with like kind of the final touches on that program. I thought this was a very entertaining show.
Hayter and Riho had a great match, too.
You know, that was an excellent tag.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, yeah, enjoyable show as always.
All right, we'll move on over to the forum, forum.postwrestling.com, where you can always leave your feedback after shows. We start off with Johnny. What's up, guys? So this episode was pretty good. The Rio Hayter match started off a bit sloppy, but man, the last few minutes got me, and it seems the crowd got back into it. I was looking forward to Danielson and Silver, and it did not disappoint. I love the heavy focus of kicks in this match, and despite Brian winning, he let each Dark Order member shine. But the real highlight of the night, the announcement of the debut of Hook. I really hope he knocks it out of the park this Friday, and Fuego is the perfect opponent. Do you think that Malakai and the Varsity Blonde spot is set up to bring in Brody King to keep the tag to keep that tag team from Bola? Also, any surprises next week? Maybe Kyle reuniting with Bobby Fish.
Well, I believe they have been doing some Brody King Malakai Black teasing, you know, and I think logically the biggest stage that they could bring that act to would be AEW, with Brody King probably needing a full-time home after this. I think he is among the names that are most buzzed about coming out of that ROH current class that would make his way up to AEW. And if you're going to do a House of Black stable, he probably would be the people's first choice. So I could definitely see that happening. Can you, John?
Certainly. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's certainly in the realm of possibility.
I don't know if this Varsity Blonde's story necessarily is required to set, like, it feels like they're already quite overpowered, I have to say. Like, Malachi, like, the Varsity Blondes are hardly the type of act you need to bring, you know, extra numbers to help you face, right? So, I mean, it could. You know, Julie Hart could be a recruit as well. Kyle O'Reilly, what do you think, John?
I mean, everyone's going to speculate about that. And, I mean, the way that this program is going, like, the idea of the best friends and Adam Cole bringing together his best friends, I think, like, there's an easy entryway here for Kyle O'Reilly. And I would say he is one that I think people are most curious about coming off of Tuesday in the immediate future. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that it's going to be speculated upon over the next week. And if he doesn't arrive, it's going to continue until people know what his destination is going to be.
Yeah. I mean, do you save that one of the big shows coming up? If we are getting a big debut,
it depends. I don't know if it really matters, like which week you do it. I think it depends on what you have mapped out and where whatever program is going on. Like, you would naturally assume he's coming in, if he is coming in, that you would attach him with Cole and Fish and play off of all of that. So if they've got the angle that is set to peak and he could arrive anytime.
We got a Jesse from the Six who says, what an opening promo from CM Punk. He managed to shout out Dennis Rodman and Barry Trotz. He insulted the Islanders and the Senators. You love to see it. It's amazing what municipal boundaries can do. The UBS Arena is a 22-minute drive from Arthur Ashe Stadium. Yet there, Punk was a hero and MJF was a bad guy. But I guess things are different in Nassau County. It makes you wonder if Wei Ting, beloved Scarborough icon, would be booed in Pickering. Okay, I know what he's saying, but it's like there's something different, I think, when you're talking about New York. Like, I think things are just kind of different there, where, like, there is unity, of course. I'm speaking for New Yorkers, but I feel like there is unity, but there's also, you know, rivalry between just a very small geographical limit. So I think New York is just a different beast, but I could be wrong. I feel too many interruptions on this show. I think every single interview segment was interrupted before the subject could say two words. What do you think of the Black Mist? I get it's traditional wrestling staple, but it's nearly 2022. It's just too goofy for my taste.
It's put into angles that are designed to be like semi like supernatural. At least that's how they've been used of late. I think it's all if you buy into the story or not. Like, I don't think it's all that goofy that Pac now has an eye patch. It is what it is.
Would you prefer like him actually getting his eye gouged out in the middle of the match and some other?
Yeah, that to me like is way more sillier than, you know, this foreign mist.
It's all dependent on how you sell it, and to me, like, wrestling as an art form is all about that. You know, like the attack can look silly, but if you treat it as it's a serious thing, then I think to me that is part of, like, that's fair. Like, I can get into it, but I can understand why, though, Jesse might not like it.
Okay, MJ writes, hard to believe that was the same market Raw ran a few weeks ago, last week. Great opening segment. Punk went on a bit too long, but wasn't repeating himself. His material was top notch. MJF's homecoming was fantastic to see. What a moment from hearing Ben's matzo ball soup and bagel boss shouted out. The little things that made me proud. I know people who grew up with MJF. I know he was often gossiped about and sometimes mocked by peers for pursuing pro wrestling. Not the norm for kids in plain view. I'm sure tonight had real emotion for him, and it was awesome to almost see it crack through. AEW has been aces with their treatment of stars in their hometown, and it is very cool to see each time. Rest of the episode was solid, good story progression. Love what they seem to be pushing towards with Eddie and the Inner Circle Alliance and what I presume will be a Jericho program. Many fresh matchups.
Yeah, that is correct, actually. It makes a whole lot more sense why the Santana Ortiz affiliation occurred because of the Jericho thing. So thank you for that, MJ. MJ also in the chat says, Nassau County and Queens are extremely different, despite probably sharing the same wrestling fans. There you go. Finally, we got a Muggin who says, Bizarro Land is a heel sanctuary. CM Punk's innate ability to read the room was on full display. He leaned into it by poking some fun on the Long Island crowd, and it paid dividends for MJF, who soaked up the hometown reaction. only to flip it during the Battle Royal. The rest of the show hummed along as it finished setting the table for Winter is Coming. Danielson and Silver was a solid main event. Rio Hayter had some scary spots, and Trent Barreto's return was solid.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for the feedback. And thank you for tuning in to the live edition of Rewind a Dynamite. So shout out to everybody in the Zoom room. We will be back. I don't know when I'll be back, actually, off the top of my head. But Wei will be here on Friday
afternoon. Won't you be back?
That's right. I will be back. So Thursday, Wei is doing the new show, 1 Eastern with Kate from Montreal, and then MCU later on Thursday night for patrons. Friday on the new show at 1 Eastern, we will be joined by Benno. We thought on the eve of ROH Final Battle, there was no one else we could reach out to than Benno himself to chat the state of ROH, how we got to this moment in ROH's history, and looking ahead to the pay-per-view on Saturday and whatever other news is going on. So two great guests coming up the next 2 days. So 1 p.m. Eastern time, bookmark it, youtube.com/postwrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else you got going on?
Oh, I left that opening for you to plug something that I figured you had, but nothing. We're good.
I think we got it all pretty much. Oh, everybody should watch the Beatles Get Back documentary.
How long is it?
Plus, it is 8 hours, Sean. I wouldn't even suggest it to you because I don't know how much of a Beatles fan you are, first of all, and I also know you don't have 8 hours in you. So it's wildly fascinating. Like the amount of access, the amount of footage that is impeccably restored. First of all, like technically, it's incredible the amount of work they did to the video and the audio of this thing to sound crystal clear. But just an unprecedented look into just the creative process of these songs that have since become, in the 50 years, completely legendary. So I'm making my way through it myself.
How deep into it are you?
I'm probably, I've got the concert left, so like maybe I'm probably like 6 hours. 6-7 hours in.
And there's no interviews, right? You're just a fly on the wall?
On the wall completely. Yeah.
I will check this out. I have heard nothing but great things about it. I very much like the style that I've heard like it's presented in.
Yeah, yeah. The idea, I mean, it's Peter Jack. Like, what's fascinating is that like you and I have like, when you're working on small scale production, we often tend to work this way. We just like go and shoot a bunch of stuff without any real idea of what to do with it. And then it's in the edit room where like, you know, you try to piece all this together into some sort of narrative. And that's what Peter Jackson has to do with like these, something like 55 hours of footage and 150 hours of audio, try to piece that together. And he came up with this 8-hour thing, and it's great to watch.
All right. Well, go check that out. That's our final plug, and we will chat with you later this week.